It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. The tree guy, DNR forester Mark Vitosh, joins the other plant guy, Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron, to answer your questions about winter pruning of shade trees or starting tender perennials indoors. Are there bags hanging on your evergreens? And I don't mean those plastic shopping flyaways. Old bagworm nests. If so, you'll hear what to do. We'll talk about the plants in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa begins just after the news. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander, and it's Horticulture Day. Extension horticulturist Richard Giron and Department of Natural Resources forester Mark Vitosh are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life, anything you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email us, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Well, the plant and tree guys are here. Welcome, Richard and Mark. How are you today?
Good. Good morning.
Good to have you here. Let's start with something that people may have heard in the billboard there going into the news. Something about bags hanging on evergreens. Mark, what is going on?
Well, I just threw that in as a winter activity. If people want to go out, actually, it's kind of warm out there if they want to do something. But there's an insect called the bagworm. Mm-hmm. Some people often get it confused with the webworm that we see in the fall on trees that have this large web on deciduous trees. But this insect is more common on evergreens like spruce, cedar, arborvitae, but it creates a very small bag that's probably 2 to 3 inches long, and it starts usually early summer, actually takes the needles and winds that around itself with silk and actually makes a bag, but it can be very destructive. And when I first came to this area in 2000, this was a southern pest. We only saw them south of Interstate 80, but in the early 2002, 2003, and there, the winters were pretty mild, and that pest seemed to move north, and we got like 2006, 7, and through there, we had tons of calls on people around Muscatine, Iowa City, even north of Interstate 80, even up in Ames and Waterloo, of getting bagworms on their evergreen trees. The good news is they don't like a lot of cold weather, so last winter was pretty destructive on them for overwintering, and the year before, I probably had 150 calls in my office on bagworms alone. Wow. In 2007. And last summer, almost zero. I just got a call or two. So we didn't see very many. With that said, though, if you live in southern Iowa or even kind of in the central part, if you have evergreens and you see these little bags that look like cones that aren't cones, and you can actually see the needles, those are bagworms. And they overwinter in the eggs in those bags. Some will have eggs and some will not, because the males leave the bags, but the females stay in the bags. So a great way to reduce the population of that pest, if you have it in the area or on your trees, is to pick those now and use your best method of squishing, squashing, burning, whatever, to destroy them. And you can actually reduce the population come next spring with that easy practice.
Wouldn't it be difficult to get up high into the trees?
Yeah, if you have a large evergreen tree, then Iowa State has some publication information on spraying treatments and stuff. You might have to actually spray, but early in the spring is really critical. The good news is, like I said, the winter, the last two winters, I think, are really going to knock that.
Okay.
When I first learned about this pest in the late 80s, we always talked about it being a southern pest, southern Iowa, northern Missouri. Yeah. But because of mild winters, it had moved north, but now I think nature is pushing it back a little bit. But if people want things to do in the landscape, one thing they can do is monitor their evergreens for bagworms. Okay. This time of year, and if they can reach them without hurting themselves, this between now and probably early May, you could still pick them and actually reduce the population if they're there.
What kind of damage does it look like when they start really damaging a tree?
Well, when they really start damaging an evergreen tree like a spruce or a cedar, that tree will actually start to turn an off color and turn brown because they're eating all the needles. And evergreens do not produce new needles very well, and it will actually kill them. So a lot of times what happens, it sneaks up on people. They see those things. They look like little cones. They don't really notice it. By the time the trees actually start turning brown, that tree may be on its way. The population's too big. It may actually kill the trees. I've seen 30-foot spruce trees or cedar trees killed in a couple years once the populations get big enough. But it takes a while for the population to build up to that point. So if you can catch them early, you can reduce the problem.
Okay, thanks, Mark. We'll go to our first caller here, Mary in rural Butler County. Mary, are you there? Hello,
yes,
Mary.
I'm here.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you. Welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I live on the sand prairie of Butler County, and we would like to plant some evergreens this spring. We're looking for varieties, recommended varieties for our sand prairie, and specifically, what are the varieties to avoid that are susceptible to this pine wilt disease that I've been hearing about and seeing an awful lot of dead pine trees?
Well, Mary, if it's a true sand prairie, actually, natively, there shouldn't be any evergreens there at all. So we'll start with that. But if it's a real sand, I guess what you're telling us, it's a real sandy soil?
Yes, it is. Yeah,
okay.
I'm not trying to restore the prairie.
I got you.
We're trying to plant some windbreak and some habitat cover and that
gotcha.
Type of thing.
So the challenge we have in Iowa is there's not a lot of true native evergreens in Iowa. So sometimes the evergreens tend to struggle when our summers get a little hotter. So there is a limited number. There's a lot to get planted, but their longevity isn't always that great. So a few that tend to do fairly well, especially in sandy soils. One, some people like it, some don't, is Eastern Red Cedar. That's one that does make a good evergreen. Another one in that area would be White Pine.
Okay.
And then one other in kind of a lighter sandy soil would be one called Black Hill Spruce.
Okay.
But the key is variety. The one thing, if you're planting windbreaks and stuff like that, the one thing you don't want to do is plant three rows of Eastern Red Cedar, because if you get bagworms or some other disease problem or insect problem somewhere down the road, you could lose the whole thing. So if you're going to plant multiple rows, you want to try to plant different species in each row or at least mix two different species. That way, if something happens, you don't lose anything. The other thing I would suggest, because I'm not specifically in your area, is that you go to your local Soil and Water Conservation District office, the Butler County one, and check with one of the local conservationists there to see specifically what your soil types are and make sure some of those species will be adapted to those soil conditions, or see what species in your county they've had luck with as far as in sandy soils as it goes to windbreaks. Get some local information too.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks.
Oh,
for
and what about the trees to avoid that are susceptible to this wilt disease?
Well, the wilt disease, Scotch pine is the big one. Another one that you can still find on the market is called Austrian pine. Those are the two that you would really want to stay away from. One other one that you could dabble with up in your area sometimes does pretty well is red pine. It does pretty well in sandy soils too. So if you're looking for diversity, there's four different: red pine, white pine, eastern red cedar, Black Hill spruce. There's four to consider. Now, if you talk to the local people, they may say, well, we don't recommend this because we have this problem. So that's why you want to talk to them. But the Scotch pine is the one, and Austrian pine are two pines that are no longer recommended in Iowa for windbreaks.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks for the question, Mary. We appreciate it. We'll go next to Susan in Waukee. Susan, welcome to Talk of Iowa on Horticulture Day. What's your question?
My question is that I've had a huge amount of deer damage in the yard, particularly to arborvitaes and, of course, white pines. I know that they won't come out, won't needle back very well, but I'm wondering, is there anything to do to save the arborvitae, which have been eaten up, you know, as high as a deer can stand on its hind legs?
And Richard can jump in at any time, but generally, if they eat all the way back, a lot of times arborvitae won't bounce back very well. The one thing you can try is if there's not a lot of them, there are some different netting products that you can put netting on those lower areas, so hopefully they don't eat back into that tissue. The one thing I have found, though, if you're going to use any kind of netting, you almost have to use like a stake or something to keep them from pushing it in, because if you just wrap it around, I've had people watch the deer actually push the netting and actually force the needles out, then they eat the needles off, and then they push it in more, and then they eat the needles off again, and then they keep pushing until they get what they want. But
once they've done it, is there anything to do to
bring that back? No, there's nothing you can do by fertilizer spraying or anything like that that's going to bring that tissue back. Depending on how deep they went and how much, the thing all you can really do is wait till spring and see if you get any kind of sprouting. But usually on arborvitae, if they really go deep, you're not going to get a lot of sprouting. Do you have anything to add to that,
Richard?
Will
a tree live even though it's been eaten up halfway, if it's 20 feet tall?
Yeah, the tree will, you know, if you don't have more than probably 20 to 30% damage or even less than 50% damage, that tree's going to live. Just aesthetically, it's probably not going to look the greatest.
Good. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Susan, and we appreciate it. We'll go to Dan here in Webster City. I think you have a question just along the same lines. Is that right, Dan? Dan? Maybe, hello, Dan? Is he?
Hello.
Hello,
I'm here.
Yeah. Just, you have a deer eating problem as well, I see.
Yeah. It's with some spruce trees that we set out, different varieties of spruce trees, and they're about 5 to 8 feet tall, and they're, you know, they've eaten the on some a couple of trees, they've eaten all the way back to the trunk. So I was wondering what I could do.
Well, the one thing this tells us, Dan, is it's been a hard winter, because one of the least favored foods for deer is spruce, because the needles are very stiff and sharp sometimes. And so when you start getting calls on deer damage on spruce, you know it's been a pretty tough winter. All you can do, again, it's going to depend on the percentage that was damaged. If they went all the way back to the trunk on some of those branches aren't really going to redevelop on spruce trees. The good thing on spruce trees is they do have buds along the twigs. So if they just eat some of the tips, you still may, on some of those branches, as long as there's buds, those buds will break this spring, and you're still going to see some growth. But, again, using some type of fencing or something to keep them off, and there's some different repellents out there, too, that you have to spray multiple times. But you have to keep them away from really causing the damage.
We have to take a break here. Be very short. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa with Mark Vitosh and Richard Geron. We'll be back in a moment. You're tuned to Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, along with Extension Horticulturist Richard Geron and DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. They're here to answer your questions about the plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. That's talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mark, just before the break, we were talking about the damage that some animals are doing to trees and other plants, particularly because of the hard winter, but you wanted to follow up with
comments. With Dan's call and stuff.
Yeah.
Basically, with trees, the best way to prevent damage is to restrict access. And that usually means some type of fencing or netting or something like that. And like I said, there are numerous repellents out there, but you often have to, especially in the wintertime, and that's when sometimes the damage is the worst, especially with evergreens, because there's nothing else to eat. You might have to spray multiple times. And these repellents sometimes have egg mixtures, pepper mixtures, Tabasco, all kinds of different things that are bad to the taste. There's all kinds of different ones out there. Some with blood meal, different things like that. But people just have to try different things. The best way, though, is to restrict access. But once the damage has been done, it really depends on how much they ate, what's left. So a lot of times it's letting things come out in the spring and see how it is.
Richard, do you have add anything to that as far as some of the shrubs and other plants out there?
Well, we've had snow cover since basically early December.
Mm-hmm.
And for the rabbits and the deer, there simply is nothing to feed on except for those things that stick above the snow.
Right.
And so you have the evergreens like your yews and your arborvitae. And the unfortunate thing about the evergreens, they don't have the same recuperative power as your deciduous plants. So if they destroy the buds on the spruce trees, if they're gone, if they're destroyed, they have no way to leaf out. And so those branches basically are dead. They're going to die. So like Mark said, I would just wait and see. And if those branches in the spring do not develop any new growth, they never will. And then you're going to have to prune those off.
We like to say what you see is what you get.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is what's left is what you got.
Okay. We'll go to Ron in Warren County. Ron, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, I've got a pear tree, a seven-year-old tree, and I was pretty sure when it got that old that the rabbits and things would leave it alone, so I didn't rewrap it. And the rabbits girdled it this winter, and there's looks like 18 inches to 2 foot high all the way around it. And I'm wondering, I heard something about a bridge graft, and I'm wondering if that's feasible.
Richard?
It's feasible, but I don't think it's very likely. If the area was smaller in size, let's maybe say 2 or 3 inches, you could possibly do that. Basically, what a bridge graft is, you would take small branches from the tree, and you would make some cuts, and then you would place them between the two areas that have been damaged,
mm-hmm,
to bridge that gap, basically.
Okay.
And if it was only like 3 or 4 inches, that might work. You might have to put several of these around the actual trunk at that point. But when you have an area that's like a foot, foot and a half in length, that becomes very, very difficult. So
okay.
I'm afraid most likely that it's not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to fix it. And it's basically destroyed, I'm afraid.
Well,
so
the only thing I have to do then is take it out and replace it.
Replace it. And what I would do when you replace it, when you replant the tree, is when you plant that tree, at the same time you're planting it, get some hardware cloth, which has that metal fencing,
mm-hmm,
and place that around the trunk immediately.
Okay.
And leave about 2 inches between the trunk and the actual fencing.
Okay.
And if you can, get a 3-foot-tall piece of fencing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can leave it there permanently for several years. You don't have to take it off in the spring and put it on in the fall. You can basically leave it there permanently. And so it saves on labor. But I would do that because I think this tree has been so badly damaged that repairing it or bridge grafting probably isn't very feasible.
Okay.
The one thing I tell you, Ron, and I've seen some funny things out there, is if you have space to leave that just in the spring, just to wait, sometimes you'll get quick callus tissue that starts to try to develop in the spring, and sometimes you'll get some natural arching. And depending on how deep they went, once in a while I've seen a few live, again, depending how deep and if it's completely clean around or not. So if you have space to leave it and you got nothing to lose, you still may want to wait and just see if anything happens.
Now, another possibility would be, depending on exactly where they did this, let's say they did this maybe a foot and a half above the ground,
yeah,
and then higher than that.
Yeah.
Now, the graft union typically is at the soil surface.
Mm-hmm.
So what would typically happen is the top of the tree will eventually die.
Yeah.
In response to that, if you have enough space beneath the actual damage, I would assume that portion will send out numerous suckers. And if you wanted to, it doesn't always work, but you could do this where, if that's the case, you would simply prune off the top of the tree later on next year. You would let all the suckers grow. And then the following year, you would select what you thought was the best sucker as far as the most vigorous, the strongest sucker. And as long as that sucker was from above the graft union, that is still the very same tree you planted. It's going to produce the same fruit. So what you could do then is prune off all the other ones and leave that and let that develop into a tree. But if you do, you've been set back several years, and you may not want to wait and try that. But that's an option, too.
Well, I sure that's more information than I planned on. But that's okay. That's okay. It's really been helpful. Now, I've got another quick question. I've asked you this before, and you've answered it, and I forgot what your answer was. What do I put in the ground this spring when I plant those bushes?
Okay, what I would do is go ahead and buy some Canadian sphagnum peat.
Okay.
Or Canadian peat. Goes by various names, but basically they sell this in these square-like bags.
Okay.
They're shaped like a brick, basically, the bags.
Yeah.
And the material is kind of a reddish brown, and it's very, very acidic. And so when you plant the blueberries, dig a fairly shallow hole, but a wide hole, maybe 3 to 4 feet wide, so a very wide hole. And you take half the soil from that hole, and you take an equal amount of peat and mix those together, and then you backfill with that 50-50 mix, and that effectively lowers the pH. The pH of the peat is typically around 3.5 to 4, and so that does a very good job of lowering the pH.
Okay, how many do I have to do this, like semi-annually, or?
No, the first time is all you need to do. Now, later on, what I'd probably do in the following years, I would mulch the plants because they have a shallow root system, so I'd use wood chips.
Okay.
And every year after that, I'd probably buy ammonium sulfate. Mm-hmm. Look for that at a garden center. It's kind of hard to find, but you'll find, I think, eventually. And ammonium sulfate contains both nitrogen and sulfur. And so you'd go out in the spring and sprinkle a little bit around the plants, and that supplies nitrogen, fertilizer, but it also supplies sulfur, which tends to keep the pH low. And so you're basically doing two things with one product.
Okay.
Thanks, right. Ron.
Thanks for your
yeah.
help.
Oh, well, thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. We're going into a break pretty soon, but with Jerry in Cedar Rapids, do you have a quick question here for us?
It's not following the train that's been going, but it's a little different. I was reading an article in the Gazette, the Cedar Rapids Gazette, this week, and they were talking about a Laotian project to help the folks there, that they're making bags from kudzu vines, and having traveled in the south and knowing the destructive nature of kudzu vines, I'm wondering if they process these things and make them into bags, if they ever go to landfills or discarded or anything like that, are they vigorous enough that they could root and spread that in that manner?
As far as the plant itself, it's never been found in Iowa, to my knowledge.
No, I understand. Yeah, I understand.
And
that, yeah.
I don't believe it's hardy in this area. That's
actually, I have to.
Oh, really?
There's reports they feel that it might be in some southern parts of Iowa.
Okay.
And it's Mississippi.
You hear about the Asian carps and the Great Lakes and the threat. And it's one of those things you kind of wonder about, man, is one good thing doing something inadvertently that can harm us?
There are some plants like that, but I'm not sure if this one, if it would actually regenerate from that bag.
Thanks, Jerry. It's a good question. We're going to have to take a five-minute break here, but when we return, Horticulture Day continues with Forester Mark Vitosh and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron.
State politicians question global warming science. This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. The Environmental Protection Agency officially has found global warming gases such as carbon dioxide are a threat to human health. Mark Brush is here. You say three states are challenging that finding.
Yeah, well, the EPA says it has a duty to regulate greenhouse gases to protect us from global warming. The agency plans to regulate the biggest greenhouse gas emitters, such as big factories, power plants, and oil refineries. The state of Texas, Virginia, and Alabama have filed legal challenges to try to stop the EPA. They say the coming regulations will be bad for the economy, and they called into question the science that the EPA based its decision on. Here's the Texas Attorney General, Greg Abbott.
The EPA should not now blindly accept what the world is beginning to second-guess. The information on which the EPA relies can neither confirm nor deny that there has been global warming or that temperatures have risen.
The EPA says it's evaluated all the science available for the last 10 years and that the evidence is, quote, compelling that climate change is a threat to human health and welfare. Those three states that are challenging the EPA's decision to regulate greenhouse gases are countered by 16 other states supporting the EPA's decision.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
This is the Environment Report. Every once in a while, we hear a term that's used a lot, and we all think we have an idea of what it means, but it actually means different things to different people. I got to thinking about that when I heard Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma call for sound science at a recent subcommittee hearing, and then moments later, Senator David Vitter repeated that call for sound science.
I think the answer is exactly what Senator Inhofe and others have been saying, sound science. Complete focus on, complete reliance on sound science above all else.
So sound science, I think most of us think that means well-researched, unbiased, verifiable science. Joining us now is Oliver Hauck. He's a professor of law at Tulane University. So, Professor, what's that term, sound science, mean to members of Congress?
It means whatever they want it to mean. The first thing you have to understand is sound science is not a scientific term at all. It has no scientific definition. It's like saying sound congressman or sound senator. It's in the eye of the beholder. In the legal world, everyone knows what sound science is. It's the science that supports your client's position, and bad science is the science that is on the other side. So in the real world, it's a very cynical term, and it's very cynically used. This is a political term.
Has this term sound science always been attached to this political baggage?
Yes, it has. Frank Lutz, the Republican strategist in the early 2000s, sent a very well-known memorandum out to all Republican congressmen and senators saying that the coming issue was climate change, and the world consensus that this was urgent and something had to be done was overwhelming and irresistible. The only loophole, the only point of attack would be to attack the science. And so they did, with great success.
So calling for sound science is a delay tactic.
Oh, clearly so. Clearly so. And they know it. And they know it.
Oliver Hauck is the professor of environmental law at Tulane University in New Orleans and author of the book Taking Back Eden, 8 Environmental Cases That Changed the World. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham.
Support comes from the Park Foundation, the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. You can find more information and post your comments at environmentreport.org. The Environment Report comes from the University of Michigan.
This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron, our plant guy and our tree guy, are here. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh, they're here to answer your questions about trees and other plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we'll go to Ray, who's in Linn County. Ray, what's your question? Welcome to the program.
Yeah, see, I'm thinking about putting in a windbreak, and I want to use Canadian hemlock. I believe it's a pretty thick growing. So what can you guys tell me about it, and is it poisonous to any livestock?
I haven't seen it on any. There is a hemlock that's not actually a tree. I'm not sure on the poison aspect, but it's going to struggle. It's a tree that's obviously native to the northwest United States, and it actually likes real nice, cool, moist environments. When you get out in the hot summers and stuff, it really struggles as an individual plant. The places I've seen it do okay in Iowa is if you have a house and you've got a corner on the northwest or northeast corner, mostly northeast corner, protected, and it's kind of shady, and there's other trees around, they seem to do fairly well. I've seen a few exposed that do okay, but in general, they're going to potentially struggle a lot more with our hot summers as a true windbreak tree.
All right. Sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. Ray. And Mark, we wanted to touch on the importance of pruning oak trees at this point in time, not to wait on that. Is that
right? There's a, we wanted to get that one message across today, if I get one across. This time of year is a great time to be pruning oaks. There's a disease called oak wilt, and it's caused by a fungus, and it gets transmitted by a little beetle that brings the fungus to open wounds in the springtime and early summer. So now is the time, if you have oak trees, you really want to, I tend to be very conservative and say March 1st. If you've got oak trees, especially in the southern part of the state, you want to prune those within the next few weeks here. If the weather stays really cold like this and goes on for a couple weeks, you might be able to extend that a week or two. But generally, here in the next few weeks, if you have oak trees and you're going to have them pruned, now's the time to do it. And then if you don't get it done, you want to wait till probably sometime next early November before you prune oaks.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's, once again, because?
Because of the disease oak wilt.
Okay,
if you have open
wilt.
Wounds,
yeah,
that tree is much more susceptible. And if you do in the summertime have oaks that you have to prune because they were damaged or you backed into them with a truck or something like that and you have some broken branches, you prune them correctly and then you put latex paint on them immediately. But that's the only time we would use any wound dressings on trees. But if you can do it, the wintertime is the time to prune your oaks.
Okay.
So time is limited here.
It's of the essence for oaks right now.
Because spring is coming, believe it or not.
Yes. We'll go to Andrea in Davenport. Andrea, welcome to Talk of Iowa on the Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Hi. I was wondering how to control Japanese knotweed. I've dug up the soil and removed all of the roots in my area of the yard. However, it keeps growing over from my neighbor's yard. He has a huge patch where he grows the Japanese knotweed, and it's very invasive, and I'm trying to find a way to get rid of it without having to use systemic herbicides.
I think you have to have a conference with the neighbor, because mm-hmm. this has to be a united effort. As long as that neighbor is not doing anything, it's going to come back. And even with your best efforts, it's probably going to be a job that may last for maybe 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
But if that neighbor's not willing to help, then mm-hmm. it's kind of like trying to swim upstream. It's going to be very hard to do. And as far as control options, you basically have two. To dig it up repeatedly, and I mean repeatedly, do it mm-hmm. several times a year, and remove as much of that root system as you can. The other option is to use Roundup and use that periodically. But those are the two options that you really have, is to dig it up or use Roundup and do it repeatedly on both of those two.
And you have to destroy it, because if you leave it, if you just drop it, it can actually sprout, or if it's mowed or anything like that, you can actually spread it that way.
Well, I know. I certainly can't compost it or anything.
What you're trying to do is basically destroy the root system and also eventually weaken the plant. When you dig it up, you may not get all of the root system, but the root system that remains is going to have to use stored food to produce a new shoot. And every time that you dig it up, you're hopefully using up some of that stored food in whatever roots remain. And hopefully over time, you're going to starve what you can't dig up, and it's going to basically die. But it's going to take time. It's a very, very tough plant.
Yeah, okay. So I guess I have another question, because I've heard it called Godzilla bamboo. Is there any way that if I can't get along with my neighbor that I can do, like, a cement blocking in the dirt between our yards to help block the root system from coming through?
Boy, easier said than done. You'd probably have to go down maybe 2 feet or more, possibly, to prevent that. So it's hard.
Okay.
Good luck, Andrea.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. We appreciate it. We'll go to Lou in Ames. Lou, welcome to Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning.
And by the way, I did hear that spring is coming.
Yes.
You heard it here. Eventually.
I have a follow-up on a gentleman that called about blueberries and ammonium nitrate that you recommended.
Mm-hmm.
It is hard to find in garden stores, but if he will go out to any farm supply, he will be able to buy a 50-pound bag and a heavy plastic bag for less than he would pay for 2 or 3 pounds anyway. $10-15 is what that'll cost.
Yeah, and I would prefer ammonium sulfate.
Yeah. Oh, you would prefer ammonium sulfate rather than ammonium? Yeah, you're right. I misspoke. I apologize.
Yeah, because
that's what they will have.
Yeah, I'm trying to do two things at once. I'm trying to feed the plant and also lower the pH. So if they can, ammonium sulfate would be the best. Ammonium nitrate's fine, but then they would have to apply the sulfur separately, which they can do also.
Well, but actually, ammonium nitrate, I found...
It also helps to acidify the soil, too.
Right. It both helps acidify the soil and provides the nitrogen, and that's the reason the blueberries need the acidic soil, is because the nitrogen isn't available until the pH is down low. So by having the ammonium nitrate there, you're doing two things at once. You're providing the nitrogen that they have a hard time taking up, as well as acidifying the soil.
Right.
And it's real cheap. It's 50. They use it as an adjuvant in spray tanks in the summer, so all the farm supply has that.
Well, thank you very much for letting us know, Lou.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling. We'll go next to Steve in Butler County. Steve, welcome to the program. What's your question?
I have some spruce trees. They're Black Hill spruce that they're dying. They're about 10 years old. They're about 12 feet high. I probably got, 100 of them planted here, and about 6 or 7 of them. I had one die last year, and then the rest of them, the 5 or 6 others, looking like they're getting sick. I've sent samples into Iowa State, limb samples. I've had the district forester out, and nobody seems to be able to tell me what to do. What is there another step? Is there anything else I can do, anybody I can get that would try and tell me why these trees are dying?
What are the symptoms, Steve, as far as their death?
That they start turning real yellowish-looking, and they get a lot of pine cones on them, and then they die.
Have you ever had a soil test done?
I've soil tested it, yes.
Okay. And did they find anything egregiously wrong with the soil?
No.
No?
What was the pH?
It's about 5.5 or 6, something like that. I don't have it right in front of me, but as I recall, it's a little low, but not terrible.
How about drainage? Does it drain well?
They're actually setting up on a hill behind my house. So.
Okay.
But the soil itself, I mean, even though they're sitting on a hill, what is the...
Heavy clay soil.
I'm thinking some same lines that Richard might be thinking is, even though you're on a hill... It's the internal drainage we're worried about. I mean, the water does run off on a hill, but it does still get absorbed. And if you think about the last couple summers, even if you're on a hill, if the soils are saturated, those fine roots that absorb those nutrients and water are very susceptible to being, saturated. So you can actually start to get some death and dieback. And yellowing sometimes can be a related symptom to that. So the thing to look at is if you do get more of those, the one thing to think about, too, is it just one tree here and there, or is it 3 trees in a row, or what kind of pattern are you seeing there?
No, actually, the driveway runs alongside of where I started planting these trees.
Uh-huh.
And the trees are along the driveway. I mean, now they're... They're 20 feet off or 25 feet off the driveway, but they are the ones that are kind of along the driveway.
Well, the one thing that you would have in that area is just, if you have clay soil, is just the fact that that soil might be more compacted along that general area whenever they developed. And it takes a long time for soil to freeze and thaw and to get back to a better bulk density. So you may be looking at drainage as one of the potential causes, because it tends not to just happen overnight. Again, that water stress can cause those little roots to die, and you can cause some stress on that tree. And then, again, depending on the pH and stuff too, you might have some nutrient problems related to that. But it could be drainage.
Is there any way to determine if that's what it actually is?
Well, the thing that I would do is if you get more that are showing those symptoms, or if you get some that die, is to dig them up and really look at that root system and see how healthy it is.
I dug the last one. The one that died last year, and I dug it last summer at the suggestion of the district forester, and it looks, to me, it looked like a normal root system.
Okay.
A big root, there was a lot of roots. In fact, I had a heck of a time digging it.
Okay. Well, I don't know what else to tell you. Do you have anything else, Richard? But
it seems rather odd. If they couldn't find any sign of insects or disease, I would have to say that's not the case. They're not involved. And then if they're not involved, then that would lead to me to believe it's the environment and possibly the soil. And I'm just not sure exactly what it is.
I planted these as about 3 foot tall trees. I planted them 10 years ago. And they've done wonderful. I mean, they look beautiful. They're big around, and like I say, they're, I'd say, probably 12 foot tall. These trees have done wonderful until last year, and then this started last year, and it's...
Okay. But if you think about 2007 and, well, 2008 and 2009 were pretty moist years. So, again, the problem is if it's water stress or drainage stress, it doesn't necessarily, and we have this every time that we have floods, we may see decline in plants 2 to 3 years after the fact of the stress, because if that tree doesn't, that root system doesn't build back up, it can start to have some problems. I saw the same thing last year on white pine. I haven't seen it on Black Hills spruce in my area, but that doesn't mean, I would keep working with your district forester as those symptoms come. Call them again, because people will call me again, and we'll try to maybe relook at it and see if we see anything else, because there's really no common disease or insect problems that have those kind of symptoms on the spruce. Now, I have seen spruce in my general area that, and it wasn't Black Hills, it was blue spruce, that did have some sensitivity to drainage, and one of the symptoms we saw was yellowing.
Thanks, Steve. Take another look.
Okay, thank you.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. Well, we have an email here from Derek in Iowa City. He asks, we have a sugar maple we planted 7 to 8 years ago. It's growing nicely, but it has a fair number of limbs growing at acute angles, which I know is not optimal for the tree stability in the long run. Please advise on pruning. Is the tree too young yet to be doing serious pruning?
How old did he say?
7 to 8 years.
7 to 8 years.
Sugar maple.
Probably not too young. There's a great publication called Pruning Trees and Shrubs from Iowa State. It's publication SUL-5. It was produced by Dr. Jeff Isles, horticulturist. And the key is when you're developing shade trees and developing good structure is if it's a really poor angle, so more of a V-shape angle, then you want to prune those off fairly quickly. You actually want angles that are more L-shaped, much more wider, and you want to promote those. So if we have branches that are fairly narrow, I would go after those probably right now. The one key is you don't want to take more than probably 20% of the tree's crown any year during your pruning. So I would go after those bad structured angles or bad angled branches first, but then over time, if he's going to do some lifting, he wants to leave those lower branches on till they're at least an inch in diameter and get them off before they're 2 inches.
Okay.
Because you want to minimize the size of wound, but you don't want to take them off too quickly. But if you have those branch angles that are poor structured, you actually want to get those off fairly quickly.
Okay.
And there's some good, there's a picture or two actually in the publication I talked about, Pruning Trees and Shrubs, that shows you how to make those cuts.
Okay. You're listening to Mark Vitosh, Forester, on our Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day, along with Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Call in with your questions, 1-866-780-9100. We'll go to Terry in Des Moines. Terry, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
I've got a very wet backyard. last spring, actually, we had some running water through it, and I'm trying to figure out what kind of plants I can put in there. We did put in some tiling, and we're hoping that that dries it out a little bit, but I'd like to know what kind of plants I can put in there to try to dry out the soil, and I'll take the answer off the radio.
Okay. Thanks, Terry.
Do you want me to start, Richard?
Well,
or do you want to start?
I was going to say right off the bat, possibly red osier dogwood.
The one on top of that I was going to add is silky dogwood, which okay. is one that tends to be fairly adaptive to moist soils.
Possibly some willows.
Elderberry is one that you can actually collect fruit off, too. It's good for wildlife.
So those would be the two that I would probably look at. And he was calling from where again?
Des Moines.
Des Moines. Possibly the bald cypress. I like that tree.
I do too. And then I was going to throw in, now that he's put tile in, maybe even a swamp white oak if he's looking for a deciduous, or a broadleaf deciduous tree. But I like bald cypress too.
Okay, so there are some some answers
multiple
to that.
Multiple answers.
And if you have a question for Richard Giron or Mark Vitosh, give us a call, 1-866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have a email from Annie Annie didn't give her address, but she does ask, she says, I have a blue spruce that is taller than our two-story house and is quite beautiful. A couple of years ago, we cut off all the underbranches that were completely dead. This year, for the first time, some of the branches are completely brown but still continue to show some new growth at the end. Can you explain what is happening?
Well, Annie, it sounds like you might have a needle cast disease. There's a really common needle cast disease called rhizosphere needle cast on blue spruce or Colorado spruce. There's actually another fungus called stigmina that's very similar, but what often happens is the lower branches will start to die, and the death starts in the inner part of the branch, and before it gets out to the end, you'll have some blue or green tips, and it works its way up the tree over time. If nothing is done, that tree will eventually just keep doing that, and that may be why they had to remove those branches in the first place. The other possibility, too, is if it's close to the house, they're not very shade-tolerant, so she may be getting some natural shading from the house or if there's any other plants around that base. The one thing she can do is in the springtime, or if she still sees that brown on the inner needles, is to take some samples, take them to the extension office so you can see the green and the brown together. Then they can look at those or send them into Iowa State and actually try to verify if that fungus is there. And then they can give recommendations as far as treatments. There are some fungicide treatments, but if that is the disease, you're looking at sprays twice every spring for the rest of that tree's life to try to keep it going along.
Okay. And we have another email from Jim in Des Moines. He says he planted some riparia cuttings. Hope you know what that is. I'm not sure. In the spring of 08, they appear healthy, but the longest vine was only about 30 inches long as of last fall. The rest considerably less. They're near a downspout, so they get plenty of water, but only get about 7 to 8 hours of sun per day. Should I move them to a sunnier area?
Riparia? And I don't recognize
Riparia.
The name.
You don't read? Okay.
I don't recognize the name.
All right. Well, sorry, Jim.
Threw us off there.
Yeah. Maybe.
Because it sounded like it was a vine?
Sounds like a vine.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, they don't know, but hopefully if you could get that correct name, we'll try to answer it next time. We have a caller from Urbandale. Corrine is on the line. Corrine, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. We have I believe it's a Japanese maple in our front yard, and we accidentally ran over one of the roots that was sticking up with the lawnmower, and so half of the tree is basically not growing, and I just wondered if there's any way to revive the tree.
So when you say half the tree is not growing, certain branches are dead, or?
Right, pretty much the back half of the tree, the branches didn't produce leaves last year, and it kind of looks like half a tree. It looks like, the front half has leaves on it, but the back half doesn't.
And it's a Japanese maple.
I believe so, yes.
Possibly, maybe winter was a factor in it, because we had a very cold winter last year, as far as temperatures, and they're kind of marginally hardy here in central Iowa, so maybe that was a part of it. I would just basically prune out the dead limbs, and basically make sure it has water this summer if we have a dry summer, but you really can't do a whole lot, I'm afraid.
Okay.
I would just try to make sure it had ideal growing conditions. So you could fertilize a little bit this spring.
Okay.
Like in early to mid-April.
Okay.
And just use an all-purpose garden fertilizer and just sprinkle a little bit around the tree. And then if we have a hot summer, a dry summer, then make sure it has some water periodically during the summertime.
Okay.
And
keep
the more away from it, too, okay?
Yes.
Thank you, Corrine. We appreciate the call. Well, we're out of time for another Horticulture Day, but we'll be back in a couple of weeks. Mark Vitosh, thanks very much. And Richard Giron, thank you. And the show, Talk of Iowa, is produced by Dennis Reese. We had technical assistance by Christina Sarnelli. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back.